Hello, everyone. I would just like to take a moment to thank our sponsors. First off is Gasogene Books, which is the premier publisher of books about Sherlock Holmes and his world. They've assembled a broad array of titles sure to appeal to the discriminating reader. Whether you've just discovered the great detective or you're a seasoned Sherlockian, you're sure to find many unique volumes to pique your interest. Take a few moments to check out their website at www.wessexpress.com and browse through their titles. And once you've made your selection, ordering is just an easy few clicks of your mouse. Click, click. Also, the Baker Street Journal. It continues to be the leading Sherlockian publication since its founding in 1946 by Edgar W. Smith. With both serious scholarship and articles that play the game, the journal is essential reading for anyone interested in Sherlock Holmes, Arthur Conan Doyle, and the world where it is always 1895. Not yet a subscriber? Subscribe today to the most respected source of Sherlockian scholarship. More details can be found at www.bakerstreetjournal.com. Also, make sure to follow them on Twitter at BakerSTJournal for fun facts every single day with quotes from the canon and all sorts of things. And last but not least, the Scintillation of Scions. The Scintillation is an annual symposium of fans for Sherlock Holmes, Dr. Watson, and Sir Arthur Conan Doyle, sponsored by Watson's Tin Box in Maryland. The event includes speakers and attendees from around the U.S. as well as local Sherlockians. The tradition they have established is to have at least one first-time presenter in order to offer an opportunity for them to have the experience of public speaking and to a friendly crowd. This year's Scintillation has passed, but go to www.scintillation.org to find out about next year's and more events at Watson's Tin Box. Are you interested in becoming a sponsor? Get in touch by emailing us at info@bakerstreetbabes.com.
Oh, they call us the irregulars, but baby, we're always on time. Baker Street Babes always leave the rest of them behind. Oh, so when Scotland Yard they send you home, you feel like you're losing your you cry and want you to undermine.
Welcome.
It's 43.
Everyone, all and sundry, to episode 43 of the Baker Street Babes podcast. And it is going to be today another character appreciation episode. Maybe not the expected character appreciation in the general definition of to appreciate, but we're very excited to talk about Charles Augustus Milverton. Yeah, he is interesting and topical currently because Charles Augustus Magnusson. This is turning into a panto. Charles Augustus Magnusson was recently announced as being the villain for the arc of ABC Sherlock season 3 we're on, I believe. I've checked it on the internet, and yes. ABC
Sherlock. You've been waiting so long, you've lost track.
Oh, God. My headcanon got so big, I didn't know how many seasons there were. I think that we all sort of were emailing and thought, hey, this is like such a cool character, and there have been so many cool adaptations since this has been announced. Why not do some like canon fangirling, some fangirling over the case? I was meaning to do this, and I didn't, so I apologize. It's useless. But I was curious how many people on our podcast, when asked what their favorite case is, said Milverton, because I think it's kind of hefty.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know I did.
Right? I mean, it's a pretty high figure. So maybe just to start things off, I think starting at the canon probably makes sense. And so many people have said that. Why? You know? Why Milverton? Oh, sorry. Yeah, who's here? Taylor is here.
Hello.
Yeah.
Maria is here.
Hello.
Hello. Amy, say something.
Nope. Hello, sorry. I lost you in Maria somewhere. You know, it happens.
Yes, Artie is here, but our microphone may not be.
We heard you.
Sense. She certainly is. And I'm sitting next to Melinda.
Present.
And Christina.
Hello.
So why do we think Milverton is, you know, this supremely important and enormously popular case when, as a matter of fact, there's almost no detecting in it?
I think, personally, that there is something about what he does, the way that he blackmails people, that touches people more than the kind of things that, like, Moriarty would do. Mm-hmm. It's not so likely in your daily life that someone's going to hold you at gunpoint. But that kind of blackmail politics situation, particularly in the time it was written, is something that very really could happen to anyone.
And happen very often.
Yeah. Huh.
Yeah. I mean, his, like, the case, the only case that is named after the person, like, the villain of the case. I think we have this one, late one, the disappearance of Lady something, which I forget the title.
Francis Carfax.
You're right.
But Milverton is the only case that is named after the person, I think. So that in itself sort of makes it stand out.
Wow, I never even noticed that.
And then there's the fact that in the actual story, Holmes describes him in such a horrible way, like he detests this person. There's always a little bit of admiration for people who get away with crimes within Holmes. He has literally no admiration for what this man does.
That is absolutely 100%, a million percent true. And I probably have already talked about my, you know, my Sherlock Holmes was terrified of snakes theory on this podcast. But he always had kind of, we were talking, so Melinda and I, just to sort of get ready and amped for the episode, watched the Granada version, not that we're, you know, chatting about that yet per se, this afternoon. And Holmes, always with Moriarty, there was this sort of, oh, but it's sexy what he does, you know?
Yep.
Yeah, right.
Like, oh, the Napoleon of crime. And you have these comments from Holmes like, Watson, I would have made the tightest criminal. Mm-hmm. Like, I could have nailed it.
And I could have been Moriarty. I could have been somebody.
I could have been a contender. And you just see him, right, and almost admiring, not quite. Obviously, he's willing to give his life to take Moriarty out, but there's always this sort of love-hate fascination thing going on. Yeah. And then when Moriarty's dead, he's kind of devastated. He's like, oh, the late lamented Professor Moriarty. And Watson's like, shut up, dude. Like, I threw a lot of shit during that time, okay? But with Milverton, he loathes him. When he describes him as the worst man in London, that's a lot different. That's very different than saying he's the most dangerous man in London.
So true.
The first thing he says.
Guy is just, he's worse than dirt under my shoe. He's absolutely repulsive. And the language that he uses to describe him, you know, using the snake metaphor and everything, the creeping, shrinking sensation, I think. You see the slithery, gliding, venomous creatures with their deadly eyes and wickened, flattened faces. I mean,
he hates him so much.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's like, causing like physical and mental discomfort, which I think is why Milverton is like the best.
It's so
villain.
Great.
He's the best because he gets under Holmes's skin.
Well, it's like he's below even the honor of criminals, which means he's harder to take out. And it's like, I think I always love the cases, you know, you have like Norbury and things where Holmes is frustrated, and I love that moment of frustration where he arrives at this plan of burglary because he's not able to take him out using any normal methods.
Yeah.
And there's that desperation, I think, when you're reading Holmes. I mean, it's a long time since I read that for the first time, but like that feeling of, you know, Sherlock Holmes, you know, for 2 seconds here, it's like he doesn't know what to do. And there's that desperation of like, you know he's going to win, but how's he going to do it kind of thing.
And he doesn't even do anything in the end.
Exactly. Which is even more amazing.
That's one of the things that I really love about Milverton. It's got two things that I love in Holmes stories when they happen, and one is when they break into somebody's house. It's just always amazing when he says to Watson, do you want to break into somebody's house with me? And Watson goes, oh, yeah, of course, you know. When, where, you know, should I bring my revolver? What do you need? Which is always a joy. And the second part is when Holmes lets people off the hook, or the law versus justice thing. Because, you know, there's this woman or this person who comes in and kills Milverton at the end. And, well, yeah, but Holmes says, well, yeah, she's killed a person, but he was the most repulsive person that I can imagine. So, you know, of course, I'm not going to hand her over to the police or whatever. I'm just going to, you know, slink off quietly. And
Holmes is kind of like, I'd have killed him too.
He's not even happy. I mean, it's not that he would have wanted to do it himself or something. I think he's just glad that he's out of the way. That's sort of the feeling that I have. Because usually, you know, you would have this, you know, he would have wanted to be the one to I don't know, solve the case, to get him somehow. Probably not kill him, but I think in this case, he doesn't even, you know, he's just glad that he's rid of him.
He's not upset that he couldn't figure out the way to solve the puzzle. He's just happy it's gone.
Exactly, which is special in a way, too.
It is. It's one of the most, I mean, just reading it or watching it, or I don't care what version you're looking at, if it's done proper, man, that is a feminist text. I mean, it's just, it's badass lady power, you know? It's like Holmes and Watson are engaged by someone who's seriously in trouble to fix this for her. They end up having to work outside the law to do it, and in the end, some lady already had that shit taken care of.
Yep.
Take that, and that, and that, and that, and that.
I think so Sherlock funny. Really needs to see women taking charge and handling things, too. He's like, you go, girl.
Lindsay and I just watched the extremely enjoyable Granada version of this, and she empties about 3 or 4 rounds into him, and he's, you know, sputtering and bleeding, and there's, you know, blood coming out of his mouth, and he's making horrible gurgling sounds.
So awesome.
And he says to her, you've done me, but he's still alive. And she looks at him for about a minute. He's still alive, and she has this look of horror on her face. So I'm like, oh, you know, like she must possibly be feeling some remorse. No, she's making sure that he's not about to die. And when she sees that he doesn't, she puts 2 more in him.
Yeah. It's totally epic the way that they had her pause there and, like, stare at him.
And she basically, like, stomps on him.
Well, that's
Yeah. With her heel.
Yeah, she wants her foot in his damn face, and that that is a goal she achieves in spades. So, I mean, it's fabulous.
I wonder if she was just purposely, like, walking into all the street juice on totally. The way over. And, oh no, a dog has fouled the pavement.
She's fucking up her best stilettos.
Oh, you like
on
that?
Her.
Wait, you like that? Taste my boot.
Oh, a dead hobo. Let me get it.
Oh. There were some road apples on your driveway. Sorry.
Sorry if anyone's eating.
So the case is, like, a tiny bit about the canon case before we go on adaptations, because, like, of course, there's a lot to talk about with the adaptations. It's weird. It's structured weird. There's all kinds of weird stuff that happens in it, and all of it very enjoyable, including Milverton arriving, and then Holmes says, okay, this is the worst person in London, therefore possibly the world, and I really hate him. And Watson decides, like, I'm just going to pick up this chair
and, like, rip
it. And
tame the lion.
Watson wields the chair. It's like,
suddenly it's a professional wrestling match in the
John Watson, professional La Lucha Libre.
Oh my God, can we have
a luchador?
Okay, wow. Fan artists. Luchador. Fan artists who are listening, I want Luchador Watson. Come on.
You just created.
Dear fandom, please make luchador chair wielding John Watson with a mustache under the mask. No, better.
All over the mask.
But they're all, I only brought that up to say that, like, they're both resorting to shit they don't normally do. Like, yeah. Watson yeah. doesn't generally threaten people with chairs. And Holmes doesn't generally. Like, I don't always threaten people with chairs, but when I do, Charles Augustus Milverton. I mean, it's telling, right, at the beginning, that this is going to be a different kind of case.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think. Like, I guess the next big thing in it is the whole engagement deal. Holmes be like, you didn't think I was marrying a man. He's like, no.
Nope.
But I'm engaged. My God,
you've gone too far, Holmes.
No, but his gut reaction is to congratulate him. I mean, and yes, you know, the first thing he's like, congratulations. Wait a minute.
Watson's already out of his chair for the chest bump.
And I know we're not still talking the adaptations, but I have to put a shout out for the beautiful, wonderful scene when he announces his engagement. And while Watson is totally fine with engagement,
yes.
when he says Milverton's maid is when Watson goes, wait, what?
He says, I'm engaged, and Watson's like, okay.
Oh, cool.
Cool.
He doesn't even react, which I took to mean like, yeah, you are. Yep.
Again, huh?
Really? Are you? Really, are you? Because, like, I like Melinda's chest bump reading better than I like my own, in a way which my own was always like, yeah, I congratulate you. It was 100% yeah. sarcastic, like, every yeah. time yeah. I read it.
Joy sarcasticness.
Like, well, and I have to say, in the canon story, I think it's interesting because I feel like the fact that Holmes comes in and says that gives us the idea of a passage of time during this case that we don't always get. Like, this isn't happening, obviously, in, like, 2 days, unless this woman is insane. I mean, my feeling was that he's had to, this is a long game, like he's had to
spend some time in their house.
Exactly, make this happen, like over at least several days here. And that gives like a weight to it to me, like a feeling that he's really having to like put a lot into this case.
Put a lot into this case, eh? Really?
And yet there's always still a little bit of that, there's a girl touching me going on.
Yeah, like, how do I do this?
I got this.
Oh. I hope some sort of, you know, some sort of scene like that is going to be in the BBC adaptation.
I desperately hope.
Oh, God, that'd be hilarious.
Like, just to see his face.
I can't believe there wouldn't be.
We have to. It's one of the standout features of the case.
Yeah.
He could be so good at it.
Hey, I'm engaged.
Whoa.
What? I'm just trying to imagine.
Punched.
I can just imagine Martin Freeman's face.
Oh, yeah.
Congratulations?
I think he wouldn't even say the word. Martin Freeman's yeah. Watson would be like, no, no.
No.
What did you do? Actually, the very first question is probably, who?
And then, why?
Why?
Oh. So then.
And that's actually. There's actually potential, because remember, I don't know if this is actually still a thing or not, remember when they had this picture of when they were building the set, when they're starting on the set, and there was this picture of the bathtub, and I think in the Granada
yes.
one, there's
yeah.
this scene, amazing scene, where he's sitting in the bathtub, and Watson's like walking in front of,
right.
of the bathroom, and they're just communicating, and I really wanted this to be in that episode as well.
Because we just take baths together sometimes.
Exactly.
Why close the door? I mean,
it's so Sheetlock. It's like so. It's like the other Sheetlock that no one has give sets of. That like, and then he wanders out of the bath in a fucking sheet. And Watson makes him a hot toddy and hands to him. What is going on here?
There was important deducing to be done.
We got crime to solve. We need to be relaxed.
We don't have time for baths.
Watson, where are my cucumber slices?
I thought you were just going to say cucumber.
You made it worse.
I'm not even drinking.
That's what she said.
No, rookie error, but
it progresses weirdly. Lily, too, from the, I have a fiancé, we're going to rob this house, and into my favorite, I'm going to say, actually, apart from the obvious exchange in a case involving multiple Garadebs, my favorite conversation in the entire canon between Holmes and Watson, and it is such a beautiful character moment where Holmes says, you're not coming. And Watson says, well, you're not going.
Yeah. I'm gonna call the police. God damn it, I will.
Do not push me.
I mean, he gives him his word of honor that he's going to get him arrested.
Yeah.
If he doesn't take him and include him in the crime.
But I think that Watson's got many reasons for wanting to go. Number one, he wants to support his friend for, you know, probably being the first and foremost, knowing that if he's going into danger, that he's best served if he accompanies him and helps him out. And, you know, you might need backup. You never know. Number two, I think that Watson learned to hate Milverton to the extent that Holmes himself did.
Well, he did pick up the chair, so.
Exactly.
there has to be some prior, like, seething, loathing hatred there, yeah.
And with Watson's nature and the way that he feels about women, what he describes in the story is that when he saw Milverton's safe lying open, that it was like the great maw of a dragon with the reputations of many fine ladies contained inside. And this was sort of like a personal quest for Watson at this point also.
Defend the ladies.
Exactly. It's always about the ladies.
I agree.
That is a very astute point.
Well, and it reminds me of BBC Sherlock, you know, Watson getting arrested with Holmes. You know, at that point, it shows their friendship is on a level where he's not willing to let his friend go into that by himself. Yeah. Which is lovely.
I've always loved the terminology, too, because it's like, okay, this is a dragon that is capturing ladies in its maw. We are here as knights errant to see that, oh, wait a second, the princess just emptied 5 bullets into that bitch.
Exactly.
And they're just, like, hiding behind this curtain going, oh, shit.
Look at that.
I love the moment, too, where, like, Watson thinks to himself in a certain sort of just knee-jerk reaction, I think, because he hates Milverton, as you just said, Mel, like, as much as Holmes does. In a knee-jerk reaction, he's like, oh, wait, someone's shooting someone. I am physically trained to stop. And Holmes is like, nope.
Nope. Let it go, let it ride.
This is the sound of you not coming out of the Right?
Yeah, no, completely. This is such a good case.
It's awesome. It's a great case, and Milverton in particular is so easy to hate. He's so slimy. He's so disgusting. And I could imagine just the amount of anguish that he puts his victims through before actually, like, that would possibly be worse than just being shot in the face.
Because he teases them.
Yeah.
He does.
In an awful way.
Yeah.
Yeah, he enjoys it.
And the illustrations of this guy from the original series, like, he's so douchey. He's so smarmy and so slimy and just every bit as disgusting as
he
you
looks
imagine.
Like that guy that in Jurassic Park, the one that gets eaten by the one with the
sitting on
the that guy. He looks like that guy.
Oh yeah.
Like what's the name of that Lapis? No, I should know this.
Dinosaur names are hard.
Yeah, that guy. Yeah, disgusting. And in all of these, they get, I mean, some of them are done by different authors, obviously. Or,
oh, yeah, we're just looking at some of the illustrations. But he's just got this smarmy ass.
The Paget drawings are exceptionally good, especially when you consider how badly he got, you know, Grant Munro, who I keep bringing up. In these, he's every bit as cowardly and disgusting. Like, when he has his back against the wall and he's got his hands raised up in defense against himself, still knowing that he's going to be able to make his way out. Yeah. This story is just, it's great from start to finish, and I love it. And I also love, I love that they created a villain that everyone can just get behind immediately. Yeah. Like, this guy really horrifies me.
Yeah, because there's a lot of people who, like, adore Moriarty, like, to the point where, like, Moriarty's so much better than
Holmes!
Okay.
Actually, yeah, Moriarty would probably be Holmes' favorite. You know, if he, could, if he could bring one back, it would definitely be that guy.
I don't think it hurt anybody, but could we do that again?
Yeah.
So in the canon, it's described, Milverton's described as looking like Pickwick, Charles Pickwick, from the Pickwick Papers. So he, in a Dickensian sense, he's meant to be this sort of small, rotund, harmless, balding, spectacle sort of embodiment of goodness and happiness, and he's just pure douche, and something about that is really, like, satisfying, because who doesn't love a good old-fashioned villain, right?
Yeah, I would. I'm glad you mentioned that, because I'm a huge fan of the Pickwick Papers, and that reference immediately just, the idea that he's, like, this horribly evil person wrapped in this really benign package is just makes it that much more disgusting.
Completely, because Moriarty's meant to look like, you know, his head's oscillating like a lizard, and he's just this, like, truly disturbing individual upon meeting him, whereas Milverton, if you didn't know what his gig was, you might be like, oh, what an affable person. Although I do think, you know, we've all had that experience of talking to somebody, and they look perfectly nice, but they have crazy eyeball.
They did great with that in the Granada series.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
We keep going.
He looks so much like this.
I have canon questions.
Yeah, oh, yes. Oh, of course. Yeah.
Canon questions.
We should do
Sorry.
That.
Sorry.
Oh, no. Also, Milverton in the canon, is that's the only description of Watson we ever get. Ever.
Yep.
Yes.
And that's hilarious, right? The end? I mean, like, come on. That is so funny. Like when Lestrade comes over, he's like,
you want to help us with this case? Holmes like, I would touch it with a 10-foot harpoon.
Lestrade's like, why? He's like, well, you got this really vague description of somebody with a thick neck and a mustache who was really, like, pathetic. Like, you could be talking about Watson.
Imagine being Watson,
imagine
right?
Imagine his scram face.
Shut up,
just
Holmes.
Imagine his face, like,
kicking him under the table.
Stop it.
God.
And this is how Holmes ended up with blue shin.
It's also a little interesting, maybe a little bit off topic, so I'll keep this quick, that the only description we get of Watson is not from Watson. It's from someone else talking about Watson, whereas Watson will talk about what Holmes looks like 24/7.
Yes.
Yes.
Because of reasons.
Well, he considers himself Holmes' biographer, but it's remarkable that as Holmes' biographer, he never considers himself really part of the story. I mean, does things, but if he considered himself part of the story, I think he would describe himself in the stories. Because he does such riveting descriptions of very minor characters that you kind of think to yourself, oh, Watson, you know that you're a major player in this stuff, right? Yeah. I honestly think up until Three Garradubs, he really doesn't. Like, he knows that they work well together. He knows that they care about each other. He doesn't know that Holmes necessarily is, like, that this is the other half of this thing that really works. And it's bizarre to me that he never describes himself in any other context. Like, I mean, he a tiny bit at the beginning of Studying Scarlet where he says that he's just and sick and sad, and then his whole life is illuminated by this brilliant person who gives him something that he can fight for it at the same time, and he's invaluable to Sherlock Holmes. So it's actually really neat that you get this oblique description of how he looks, because I think it's a very Watsonian characteristic for him not to describe himself, for him to stay sort of in shadows, out of the picture.
Well, even in the cases which are, you know, told from Sherlock Holmes's perspective, we don't really have a description. We have Holmes being all like, yeah, I'm now alone, this sucks. I'm with him. But we don't have any description of how he looks or, you know, how he behaves. So that's true. We don't really know a lot about it.
Yeah, Maria, that's so disappointing. you mentioned it, like, Lion's Mane and Blanche Soldier should have had descriptions of Watson. Why not?
Yeah.
Like, ugh. Mm-hmm. Because Holmes is like, cut out the poetry. Cut out the poetry, Watson. I know it was a high brick wall.
I was just going to say, I love that Doyle, like, you know, if he is intentionally not using Watson to describe Watson, Doyle as an author, if you're looking at it from that perspective rather than playing the game, so to speak, he uses that as, like, a sideways way to get in a physical description of Watson. Like, you have to wonder, you know, when he's writing this, what's going through his mind, you know, has somebody said to him, you never give us a description of Watson, and he uses this moment to, like, slide one in, which I think is awesome.
Yeah.
It's 100% awesome. And he describes himself, sort of.
So we can, so we can sort of guess. So we know without knowing, for sure.
I mean, Watson is sort of, you know, like, as much as we play the game, you know, as much as any Sherlockian group does, Sir Arthur Conan Doyle greatly resembles John Watson in a lot of ways. I mean, you've got a thick neck, you've got a mustache from Milverton, you've got, this is a guy who has an enormous... sense of right and wrong, and he, like, needs to see justice done, even if he is technically has nothing to do with it, is going to rush in and try to rescue people. They're both Scottish. They're both, you know, I mean, there's some neat things that he threw in there, despite the fact that obviously he didn't really love writing the series quite as much as
he would have done. All right, question. Clarissa Ackroyd asks, looking at the canon, do you think that Milverton was behind some of Holmes's other cases? And then this can lead into also, why hasn't Milverton been that much of a draw for Sherlockian screenwriters, etc., until now? Not like in comparison to Moriarty.
That's an awesome question.
Yeah.
Take the last bit first. Moriarty is set up very specifically as being Sherlock Holmes's equal, and there's a lot of mirroring going on there, and it's not that it's done perfectly, because God knows I've talked about this enough, Final Problem sucks, but it is a meeting of equal sort of minds, and in an adversarial sense, they are like, Holmes and Moriarty is like watching two perfectly matched chess players, which they egregiously use that metaphor in Game of Shadows, just to throw Game of Shadows into the mix, because it's awesome. But I think that's why, I mean, the Napoleon of crime, the imagery is brilliant. With Milverton, he's in the one case, and honestly, Moriarty's only in two. He's only mentioned in The Valley of Fear and The Final Problem, and then obviously The Empty House, but by then he's dead, so it doesn't count. In Milverton, I think absolutely he should be given more attention by screenwriters. He's great. And I think that what prevented them was that it seems like this is a very isolated incident. It seems as if Holmes had a client in Lady Eva and that he solved the problem and now Milverton is dead. So it seemed like less of a long story arc to explore. Possibly that's why they haven't used him as much, but I can't imagine not wanting to see any Holmes and Milverton adaptation. I mean, like, I think everybody should be doing this stuff. And yes, absolutely, there's got to have been prior cases.
Yeah.
He was involved.
I mean, also, it's a case that I think updates really well to the 21st century.
Definitely.
I think blackmail is so easy, especially blackmailing young women. It's really easy. I think what Elementary did with updating it to the 21st century with, like, you know, text that get posted on the internet, that's the kind of stuff that Milverton would do in the 21st century, and that was kind of the episode that got to me most because of that. So I'm thinking what you were saying earlier about it being a case that would feel to a reader perhaps as something that could happen to you rather than, you know, somebody holds you at gunpoint. That was kind of that same feeling.
Artie, while your mic is working, how many people have seen that Elementary episode? Because I haven't, so if you want to talk about it.
I have not.
Yeah.
We're the only Elementarians in the village.
No, it's
great. I haven't caught up with it. Do you guys mind talking about it a little? Because I don't think that any of the rest of us have seen that episode specifically.
Yeah, without spoiling it.
It's out for God's
sake. We're about to talk about it.
Spoiler.
Well, essentially, he's less important and less... I mean, he's a bastard, absolutely. I mean, and from the way that he's treated as a character, he's absolute gross. So it sort of fits. But he's not as important to Sherlock as he is in the canon, I think, just in comparison. He's just one of those bad guys, but he's nowhere near, the real bad guys. But he's pretty gross, and it's blackmail, which goes into a very... I mean, it's very topical because he is doing, you know, internet recordings of young girls, etc., which is, you know, very topical because of the bullying that's going on, etc. And so I think it's a very important part. Actually, I think it's two episodes which he features, or even more, I forget. So he's sort of important, but he's not as cool as I think he is in the canon. I know, just from the feeling of it. I mean, he's more of a really dirty bastard, basically.
Yeah, that's that. And there's also within the same episode, I think it's called Dead Man's Switch. And within the same episode, you have the whole Holmes dealing with graphic issues. And the the poems, because basically the basic premise of Elementary is that he's a recovering drug addict, and so, you know, you go to meetings and then you get your sobriety chip after 1 year, and he's got trouble accepting that, and you kind of find out why, because he's not actually, you know, gotten to the goal that he set himself. And it's kind of a really nice look at Sherlock Holmes as well, and at Watson, and how they work together, like outside sort of the case. I think it's kind of a pivotal moment almost for them, which happens during that case, which I found quite nice. But as a case, and as sort of a catalyst to, you know, these are people's lives, these are women's lives that are being potentially destroyed, it had a really visceral impact on me.
Yeah, because it does get personal in a way too, because I think the guy who's asking Sherlock for help, it's his daughter, and the guy is someone who's trying to get Sherlock to take drugs again. So it's sort of, it's crossing these two spheres, so it makes it really complicated. But I think it takes away a bit from the original case and makes it something else. I mean, it's never less important, but it's, you know, Milverton is not exactly the, like, Milverton. Like, he's not the important guy. He's not the real evil guy. But the real evil guy seems to be the friend who's actually trying to get Sherlock back to drugs. And Sherlock has to make the conscious decision to not take any. So, and then this is where, you know, Watson's trust in him is tested as well. So it's quite a complicated scenario. But it's a good one. I mean, Elementary is good.
I thought that was definitely one of the stronger episodes, yeah. Probably my favorite.
Was that a two-episode arc or one?
I think it was just one, I forget. It's been a while since I watched it.
I only remember Dead Man's Switch, and I thought that was just one.
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
They dealt with the whole thing in one episode.
Good for them updating it. I mean, yeah, Conan Doyle did the whole thing in one shot, so yeah, absolutely.
Just one.
Cool. Yeah. Bubbles by the Beach had asked, how does one defeat a 21st century blackmailer? So that sort of went over that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, totally.
Yeah, cyberbullier.
That'll do. That'll do. Okay.
So if you want to know how to defeat a 21st century Milverton, watch Elementary.
Yeah.
They will. That is a terrible thing, though, you know? I mean, I have no idea what it would feel like to have your entire internet life suddenly, like...
Yeah. And it gets more complicated as well. I mean, it's not just... Because Milverton isn't the only bad guy in this episode. But I don't want to... Like, if you haven't seen it, I don't want to see it.
Oh, totally.
But yeah, it's... I mean, it's... I think it's super difficult because we put so much out there. So it's much more easy if you have, you know, anything to, you know, for people to find something to blackmail you with.
And you really can't take it back. It's not like
burning a letter.
Yeah. No, that's what I was going to say. In this day and time, we can all become Milvertons if we want. Yeah. Because we all have access to things.
Are you suggesting a career path
when I get home?
I am, Taylor.
Good.
I am.
Good.
I mean, just look at Carlos Danger and how Carlos Danger was. Oh, Lord!
Milverton lives.
For those of you overseas who might not know, there's a candidate for the mayor, the mayoral race in New York City, who was previously a member of Congress, named Anthony Weiner, of all things, and he decided to take pictures of his junk. Closed initially, and it came out that that was his clothed junk after he pretended his phone had been hacked and someone somehow secretly took pictures of his clothed stiff junk. Mm-hmm. And then, and now he decided that it would be totally safe with an avatar named Carlos Danger.
It's fine.
Some unclothed pictures.
Unclothed pictures.
Of his junk.
His junk.
A woman, what's her name? It's a good one.
It's a good name.
It's like Stacy Leathers or something.
Yeah, it is, isn't it?
It writes itself.
This is basically like, you don't even need Milverton. You're like your own. Milverton lives inside you.
That's the update.
I'm my own worst.
Holmes is Milverton.
As Ms. Leathers might say, he was a very charming correspondent.
Sprightly.
Very sprightly.
Very
sprightly text.
Oh, my God. So Morgan Mom asks, what do you think about the Master Blackmailer Ground Intelligence feature-length episode with Robert Hardy? As far as Augustus Milverton, opinion seems to be divided.
Ooh,
really?
I've seen a lot of people who think it's very hokey.
Oh, I think it's marvelous.
I think it's marvelous.
I think it's so good.
The Jack Ascot stuff is really hard. Like
the what?
The Jack, when he's in disguise. The parts where Holmes is in disguise have pretty hokey bits. The rest of it, I am 1,000% on board for Melinda.
I can look past those hokey bits, like him getting the, you know, foul water into his face and things like that. You know, like, it didn't need to be done. But they also didn't spend a lot of time on it, which is why it's easy to kind of overlook that. One thing that, so Lindsay and I watched this about an hour ago, like we keep saying, because
edit it out.
Yes, please edit that out. And any other time that I sound stupid, please also edit it out.
Yeah, we'll keep those bits.
Those are the best parts.
So that I'm going to speak. So. But there was a really marvelous moment where Milverton got invited to a ball.
Lady A. Dragonfall's ball.
And he goes to the ball, and we previously discussed, he's probably got that person's letters and that person's letters and that person's letters. And then there's this moment where they kind of focus on his face and this glint in the eyeglasses that he's wearing as his eyes are kind of darting around the room and looking at jewelry that all these women are wearing. So he's basically sizing them up and thinking, I could get this amount of money once I get those letters, or the letters that I already have, I now know that they're worth this much.
It's so gross.
It's so good. And when he looks out of the carriage and makes...
Oh, and Lady Ava
faints right off of her horse, that was actually very well done. Mm-hmm. I was terrified looking at his disgusting face, and I probably would have fainted too.
Somebody might think that is a hokey thing, but man, I mean, if you're corseted up to your spinal column...
And you already haven't slept for a week because of this bastard.
Or eaten
anything. And then he's right there just staring
at you. With his fucking glasses and his face and his little tiny lips and his snake head.
I would at the very least fall off the horse. I would just faint dead away.
Totally.
And I loved the actor. I thought he was so good in this episode. And I'm really glad that they made it a longer episode, because I think that the case and the character there's a lot going on there. And like we talked about earlier in this, the fact that most people consider it to be one of their favorite stories speaks a lot about it.
Yeah.
Yeah, for people who haven't seen that, the first half is kind of like Holmes figuring out who Milverton even is, which is a really interesting process, and seeing various types of blackmail, which I really enjoyed. I just actually watched it for the first time as well, and I liked kind of getting that more fleshed out, because in the canon story, it's like, that's already there. So it's nice to get the history of that. And I love some of the lines in it, like random lines, like Holmes saying that your plumbing is in a shocking state.
It's the worst I've ever seen in my life. I love that.
Actually, I want to interject really quick again. Holmes has two of my favorite lines in the entire canon in this case. One of them being to Watson, he says, I see that you have a very strong natural turn for this sort of thing. That's one of the best things that he's ever said.
Totally.
And I really wish I could have been there to have seen the look on Watson's face.
Right.
Because you can take it in any direction, and it's going to be hilarious every single
so
time.
Good.
My other favorite line that he has is... on the other hand, like all these stout little men who do themselves well, he is a plethoric sleeper. Agatha, that's my fiance, says it is a
yes!
That's my fiance.
He's just like, oh, that's my fiance. And he just keeps going. And I know that pisses Watson off right there. Because
the chivalry is rising.
And now you're calling her your fiancé. This is monstrous, Holmes.
Monstrous, monstrous. And then Watson pulls a glove off and slaps Holmes.
How dare you,
How
sir?
Dare you? So good. Yeah, the lines are so... And the neat thing about the Granada version is that they actually just copy verbatim practically everything, except for my favorite argument scene, that happened in the, which I am butthurt about.
So interesting that they chose to leave that out.
I can't believe they chose to leave that out.
It's such a great
scene. You're not staying, then you're not going. I can't believe they chose to leave that out. That's my giant...
It doesn't make any sense.
That's my beef with the Granada adaptation and the rest of it. You know, I'm like, I can deal with the Jack Escott character being slightly, whoa, this is a little melodramatic. But, it was really cool that they took so many of the lines from straight from the canon case, which is always the case with Granada. But like Amy was saying, the backstory that they invented is really compelling, and it makes a lot of sense, because basically you've got somebody who's been blackmailed long previous who tips Holmes off, and then you've got various friends and relations of Lady Eva who is about to be in danger but isn't yet. But then you see there's the queer plot line,
which is so great that
they put that in with Colonel Dorking completely betrayed by a male lover. Then there's the one with the woman who like eventually assassinates Milverton, where she had written letters in Paris 12 years previously, and that had also brought her husband to apparently have a heart attack and die. I don't know that I could tell if I were to tell my husband my darkest secrets, I don't think I could compel him to have a heart attack.
Your secrets aren't dark enough then.
Maybe not. I mean, I've got
you wrote letters 12 years ago.
Exactly. Like, I don't get the, like, Percy Phelps brain fever and the, like, oh, you had an ex-boyfriend, I die. You know? Like, doesn't make a lot of sense to me.
Victorians.
Victorians. They're so weak in the brain.
But is it just the upper class of Victorians that were so weak in the brains? Because we saw with, I'm sorry to bring this back to Agatha, but Agatha's got this rival, you know, for Escott, he's completely convinced
totally.
That despite the fact that he's been wooing this woman, once he steps out of scene, the other dude's going to be perfectly happy to take over where he left off.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
So is this just the Victorian ignorance of emotional life?
I want to say a lot of it has to do with reputation, maybe. And that
that's,
maybe...
That's what I think, too. Scandal as much as the love angle.
Love.
And then, the sort of, you know, working class had less to worry about their reputation.
Yeah, because they had more of a, like, because they were working class. Like, no one really cared.
They've a crap.
It smelled like poo, so, right? Who cared?
Yeah. Yeah.
They smelled like the boots that were rubbed in Milverton's face. I like knowing that the last thing in that episode that he was aware of was this just poo. I like to imagine the poo. That there's a poo-covered boot just crushing his glasses.
She definitely crushes his glasses.
I love that scene.
Yeah, my new headcanon is now
that there's poo on the boot.
Dirty boot.
Mm-hmm. Dirty boot. Maybe one of the cats pooed on the rug. Get really nice
clips. Oh, yeah. He has super furry cats.
He has cats.
Of course he has
cats. All the villains do.
He's so Dr. Evil.
You had a shame.
Dr. Evil. Yeah. Stroking the cat while he ruins lives.
If someone doesn't art that, I'll be really upset.
Victorian Milverton as Dr. Evil.
Yes.
That would be pretty tipped.
That would be good.
With Luchador.
John Luchador. Coming at him with a chair.
Good idea.
It is.
You know,
I can't draw, but that's not going to stop me.
I'm curious what other people think about that question, though. Does anyone who's currently on the podcast think that the episode was hokey and, like, crap? Like, because we've done a really positive review of it so far, but if we agree with certain reservations about it, we should
talk about those.
Go ahead.
There were parts of it that were hokey, but I enjoyed it. And honestly, I kind of like that kind of stuff, too. It probably doesn't help that I watched the episode with my mother, so it essentially turned into a mystery science theater presentation. which, by the way, just a story for everyone, started when the male lover betrays him and the wife finds out, or the fiancé finds out, and she runs away from him, and he chases her, and my mother turned to me and went, "Come back, my beard!"
Her mom sounds worth that.
I felt everyone needed to know that, but I loved it, though.
No way. Yeah. Well, I found the bits of Holmes flirting with Agatha a bit weird. But then I guess it was Sherlock Holmes. I mean, he's not supposed to be kissing a woman.
His disguise is so bad as well. Like, really, really bad.
I don't know
yeah.
It's honestly her. It's her that's hokey, is what it is to me. I don't know.
Yeah.
She overdoes some of that stuff, like jumping on him and stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
That's never, ever
kiss me and he goes, "I don't know how." Because, I mean, he ends up, like, literally, like, lying on the ground, facing the ground, and she's just, like, stroking him.
What is that about? Like, I don't, that whole scene is so uncomfortable. Like, it's a state girl, and it looks like in Jeremy Brett's head, it's like Sherlock Holmes is currently completely mentally by the fact that lady lips are now on him. into the grass like a slug.
Least about the episode and about that, the individual hokey things aside, is I don't like any sort of implication that Sherlock Holmes is not in control, out of his depth in the sense of not being used to a woman. But this is something he's doing on purpose. He's not doing this on accident, and I feel like that's the one misstep in the episode, maybe because Doyle didn't give us anything. He just arrives and is like, "Ooh, yeah, I'm engaged, woohoo." But we don't see, so they're going straight off sort of imagination, and they're going with, like, a very humorous take, which it is a humorous event, but I feel like,
it's like a Christmas special kind of.
Yeah, like, I didn't love the idea that Holmes is no longer in control of the situation. So I think that's the one thing. Otherwise, I just to put my two cents in, I did enjoy the episode very much, and I think with the first parts that they came up with, they did a great job. I just think putting Holmes in a situation that he doesn't normally find himself in, they went a little weird with that. But otherwise, I think they handled it really well.
Yeah. Holmes is such a fantastic actor, and such a very keen observer of human nature that had he wanted to, he could be Sherlock three continents Holmes. Fact that he has to play this role, I mean, we don't know if he's had to play it before or if this is the first time in his life. He got to engagement very quickly with this woman. So yeah. I don't think he was acting like an idiot while he was doing so.
Right.
I'm sure he charmed, you know, pardon me, he charmed the pants off of her. And he didn't look like garbage while he was doing it. I'm sure he was just very suave and swayed into boner. And
well, he just watched Watson do his thing for her
to yes quickly, which makes me think that he knew what he was doing and he wasn't awkward about it. And he was just like, this is what needs to be done, and did it.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. The part where it turns into like Sherlock Holmes' conflicted emotional like capacity to process lady parts is really strange. And uncomfortable. Like I think for a lot of people, like hokey, I wouldn't say that it's hokey per se.
Right.
Like, but it is
it was a way of interpreting what could have happened between the two that I think was off the mark, but I don't think it was hokey. I just think that they misstepped.
Agreed.
Misstepped.
And now, I'm now imagining, because what we don't really know anything about the final episode of Series 3, other than Lars Mikkelsen is playing Magnussen.
Which, oh my god, I'm so excited.
Yay!
Keep it together.
Keep it
together.
And like, when that was, I love the fact that in Super 2, he's like, we're going to be announcing the villain. And like, I tweeted, like, Milverton! And then it was like 10 minutes, it's like, Charles Augustus Magnussen, and I just lost my shit on Twitter for like 10 minutes.
Oh my god!
Send. Hashtag yay. I was in the fucking Dublin airport on my way back to New York City from, and I was like, please don't die, phone. Please don't die. And then I was like, I was tweeting all kinds of spoilers, like, spoiler alert, like, Sebastian Moran is a sharpshooter, etc.
My god, those were amazing.
I missed Artie.
I just said that was amazing. I really enjoyed those.
Oh, no, I'm sorry, Artie. Yeah, totally. They were like, I was like, what can I do that's a spoiler alert that is not a spoiler? And keep myself together waiting for a damn plane and like waiting for in this airport it was like waiting for the shuttle to go to the plane and I was like, do not take me away from Wi-Fi, do not take me away from
Wi-Fi. my husband makes friends with this really nice couple from California near where we used to live, and I take my cell phone and I wander off to the one place where I can get where I can plug it in and still like be refreshing Twitter like every 5 seconds. And he's like, are you okay? I'm like, yeah, there's just a thing. There's a thing. I'm fine. It's all fine. And then, oh my god.
And then the Dublin airport will forever remember the moment that a woman yelled, Milverton!
Grant Monroe arm.
And the people in the bar were just like this.
Dude, it was crazy.
This is so exciting. I'm just so happy.
I'm so happy that they're doing this episode.
Yes.
What are you most looking forward to seeing?
Oh.
Like, what part of the story? Because there's a lot of great parts in the story. What are you most looking forward to seeing the BBC version's adaptation of?
I don't want to say that, because if I say it, it's guaranteed to get written out in some way.
Holding hands behind the curtain, number one.
Curtain cuddle.
Yep.
Curtain cuddle, lips on the ear.
Lips on the ear.
Yes.
This is a fan fiction. This is canon. Guys.
Yeah. His hand stealing into mine. That's what I'm looking for.
I'm really interested to see how Magnussen and Sherlock go up against each other. Because I think this pairing will be very, very interesting and very tense and electric. Mm-hmm. And it's going to be like on the edge of your seat going, you hate each other so much.
I would anticipate it would be very different from what they did with Sherlock and with Moriarty, because Moriarty is so volatile and, like, crazy.
and I see, I would think the Milverton Magnuson would be like the very controlled opposite of that. So that's what I want to see, is how he and Holmes collide versus how Holmes and Moriarty have collided.
Mm-hmm. I think that the way that they're probably going to do Milverton is the way that Moriarty has been done in film versions for the past God knows how long.
Yeah, in the Ritchie verse, I think.
The Moriarty that we got in this version was radically different than anything we've ever seen before. I think that we're going to get a traditional Moriarty with Milverton this time. Mm. That's just my prediction. From the picture, actually makes a lot of sense.
Yeah,
I
have the same feeling.
I want the fight. I want there to be that argument where Holmes is like, no, I'm protecting you. Don't go. And Watson's like, fuck you.
Wait a minute.
Script?
Yeah. I think as much as we want the curtain cuddle, what we're all forgetting here is this is the chance for Martin Freeman to threaten someone with a chair.
Yes. Oh, my God. How can we forget?
Oh, my God. So good. I hope he threatens him with that nice chrome and overstuffed leather one.
Not just any chair.
The best part being when he has to go, Sherlock, get up.
Get up. I need to throw this.
Sherlock, I need this thing.
Oh, my God. And essentially...
Essentially,
and there's probably going to be more than just these three series, right? But it would be really cool to end this one with Watson, like, or with the scene of, you know, Lestrade laughing about, you know, these two guys, or this person might have looked like Watson, because it would nicely wrap up with Study in Pink. Right, with the
shooter. It's going to be a cliffhanger, because Series 4 has been confirmed.
Yeah, I know, but it would just be like a really nice sort of, you know, coming back to the first episode and having the same situation, and maybe actually just start noticing then that it might actually have been, so to sort of turn around, to not have him, you know, laugh about it. And
yeah, you're right, because
thinking it's a joke.
Yeah, that
but
would make total sense.
To actually have
sense.
Him realize that, you know, they're actually, you know, saying the truth in that joke. So that would be cool.
It's going to be nail-biting, whatever it is, but you're right, like, the way...
Garadabs.
They might save Garadabs for 4. Garadabs. You just want somebody to shoot John.
Garadabs. Enough. Gosh.
No. He needs one more
bullet.
I just want it to be that there's John Watson gets shot, and then it fades to black, and you hear Sherlock scream his name, and I think that'd be great.
I think
and by great she means horrible.
Right? Because this would torture everyone for another
year and a half.
5 to 7 years.
Yeah.
until these movie stars have time to like put together actual series for
The Hobbit, at least.
I do.
The Hobbit is done, but these guys are like, what's so great about Sherlock is that it launched, I mean, Martin Freeman was always like a really fun comedic character actor, and Cumberbatch was like a very sharp, incisive character actor in mostly period stuff and some other stuff that was modern. Sherlock, like, it is completely fair for the creators of Sherlock to say, as they've said multiple times, the first episode aired and it was like, oh my God, who's this fucking movie star?
Yeah.
Like, and now he's a fucking movie star. So it has to always be about this particular creative team wants to do this together. Not that it doesn't make shit tons of money, which it does, and that is one of the reasons that, you know, they have to do their promotional material the way they do. But, you know, because I think they have to be able to afford to pay them at this point. Like,
you know,
not that Cumberbatch and Freeman don't want to do it, and not that they're greedy bastards,
demand.
but their agencies are probably like,
you need to pay
put me. Like a fair price on these people, you know? And I think that all the creative team concerned could do it for the rest of their lives and happily. But, you know, they have certain business considerations to take into account. The part of the adventure of Charles Augustus Milverton that I want to see with Charles Augustus Magnuson, and that I do not want to compromise on at all, is as badass, and I want them to be so badass. I want them to break into the house and get away. I want it to be a 3-episode arc. I want John and Sherlock
sure
to, like, do all this 3-episode arc craziness that ties into other cases, and then they're going to have this clever shit where Milverton actually was involved with, like, the stockbroker's clerk or something, and you're like, what?
The stockbroker's clerk!
No one reads that shit!
And they grant the
reason Grant Monroe is raising his fist to the sky is Charles Augustus Milverton, right? So I want all 100% of these tie-ins, I want them to happen. But what I most want, what I am most dedicated to having, apart from the argument scene where it's like, if you are going down with this ship, I am going down with you. And then Holmes being like, well, we've lived together for a fucking long time, so I guess if we were in a jail cell together, it wouldn't be that much different.
It'd be cleaner
and less hazardous with chemicals. Like, that part of it, I need that, but I want so badly, they can't end the Milverton arc with Sherlock Holmes solving it. A woman has to walk up to him and shoot him fucking 5 times in the chest.
Right.
Like,
I think that will happen.
Well, I am really ready
for that. I have my own theory on who that will be.
You know, I'm not so sure that they're going to do that, because I remember before season 2 of Sherlock, everyone was saying, if they don't make Irene Adler an American, we're going to be mighty pissed off. And they didn't, and everyone forgave them, because it was an episode anyway. If they don't end it with the... I mean...
I think that's the way that that ends, because I think the big important part is that Holmes and Watson, they don't...
Yeah.
They get rid of all the evidence, but the fact is they don't solve the mystery of Charles Augustus Milverton.
Right. It solves itself.
Yes.
It resolves itself.
I know. Yeah. I think a certain lady will be the one to gut him down.
If that was the case, this is my theory.
This is my running.
That'd be amazing.
I know who you're talking about from looking at your eyeballs. And I want that. But why would she be...
I think it'll be a 3-episode arc.
Yeah.
He won't just be in the 3rd episode. There's no way.
There's no way, because
he's too good.
They tell stories way better than Sir Arthur Conan Doyle. Totally kidding.
I was quiet because I feel really uncomfortable right now.
No, my giant pet peeve with Moriarty is like a huge pet peeve, but it's like third of my arch nemesis.
Nope.
Let me tell you all about it.
He's been around for a really long time. I just neglected to mention him.
I forgot. I mean, I know we had dinner last Tuesday, and then you helped me shoot that guy, like Thursday. Appreciative. But did I tell you about it? I forgot to tell you about my arch nemesis when we were having coffee the other day.
Oh man, I can't believe I am such
a stupid bitch. Okay, so
that's literally what happens in canon, though. Almost, it's like, suddenly he's like, oh, by the way, there's this guy who's a professor. I've been after him for like years, but you've never heard of him.
That's exactly what I'm saying. And Sir Arthur Conan Doyle is the reason that we're all here right now talking about all of this stuff, and he is the reason behind this podcast's existence. But
thank you.
But yes, thank you, Sir Arthur. But man, when you wanted to kill your hero, you did in a hurry, didn't you?
And when you brought him back, you couldn't do better than I turned my boots around. I still lose nights of sleep thinking, how? What could he have meant?
Right.
This doesn't make sense.
I turned my boots around.
Yeah, I just put them on my feet.
Because you know what? I mean, feet, and I walked in them.
Because I'm a horse, and I can do that.
You know what? Now I feel kind of like that's like a extremely hipster thing to do. His name's Moriarty. You probably never heard of him.
I was wearing my boots backwards before it was cool, just so you know.
Came back from the dead. Has anyone recently seen the Russian version?
I wish.
No, never I seen haven't it. Seen it.
It's so good. It's like adorable.
Everything about the Russian series is adorable.
Like, imagine super cute version of, you know, like, everything they do, and then just superimpose it on top of the Milverton episode, and it's all of those things. It's like,
and so. I heard that they're really close to the canon text.
Yes,
I said the first episode, and it's fabulous. Obviously, we need to start preparing to do a Russian appreciation episode.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
I would love to do that because the Lenstone adaptations are killer. The only reason I was trying to watch it the other night, and just thinking about this episode recording, and I couldn't find it on YouTube. So I guess.
Yeah.
I couldn't either. Stunk. I gave it a go, but I couldn't find it.
It used to be really easy, and I think that account's been taken down for copyright reasons. So I think we just have to
Putin.
Yeah. I blame for almost everything.
Oh, my God. It suddenly makes sense why Obama canceled the meeting with him. Restorovich Holly Solovich to the internet.
The lady who shot... What?
Oh, my God. And then Obama's like, why can't I find Russia to look up? Like,
I was like, oh, no, you didn't.
We're done.
We're done.
We're not bros anymore.
Yeah, I love the
I will beef up on them wherever I can find them. Are they on YouTube? YouTube. Are they on Netflix?
No.
No, they're not on Netflix.
Oh, well, I'll ask the internet.
Okay. If anyone finds them,
yeah.
Give them our way. Totally legally, yeah.
I found the Russian series when it was on YouTube. And easily accessible, and the adaptation was great because, like, the Holmes and Watson in that series, as is the case with most series where you cast people in these roles, they work so symbiotically together and they're cast so well that, like, it's extremely charming. And the thing about the Russian series that always kind of makes me smile at the same time that I'm like, what are you doing, is it something that some of the moments are just, for lack of a better word, cute.
They're so cute. Yeah. They're like pinch your cheeks cute.
Yeah.
But Watson, he's so Watson's snuggly.
Handsome.
He's adorable.
Very
snuggly.
Handsome.
He's so like, snuggly. Like, they snuggle all the time.
Yeah.
Like, it's not an exaggeration.
No,
Watson's like a Picard.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Snuggling up on people.
It's true.
Him and his little fluffy mustache.
Yeah, and they're trying so hard to be British, but... Then again, they're just too Russian to be.
They're just too Russian snuggling. They can't help it.
Yeah, exactly.
Russian
they're just bros, you know. They're
Russian into one another's arms. I'm sorry.
If this is like the slashiest episode ever, I blame the case because, man.
Well, the fact is that they do, like, there is, like, lips on ears and hands
in hands.
And they're behind a curtain in the...
And bathing together. Well, bathing,
that's,
you know,
like,
not...
Yes,
and then there's the sheets.
The Granada one is so cute, though, because I think it's, like, the Granada episode, The Master Blackmailer, it's one of the most domestic episodes that you ever see from the series. And it's all these moments of, like, Holmes and Watson, just how they live together. And Holmes and Watson, you know, like
look at these bills!
Yeah, totally. Oh, the bill is on the mantelpiece, and he just suddenly, out of nowhere, Milverton just leaves, and Holmes turns to the mantelpiece, and he starts tapping this pile of letters, and he goes, "Bills, Watson, bills, they must be paid." And he goes, "Oh, by the way, we have this thing to do," and like he literally, it's just this two sentences of "Bills, Watson, bills."
Yeah,
we should pay them. Anyhow.
Did you get Q-tips, or was that my bad?
Did I get Q-tips?
I thought you were about to ask him, like, no.
And then him and Mrs. Hudson, and it's so cute.
Oh, like, Mrs. Hudson.
So many moments where he's telling her to get the fuck out, and she just looks back at him, and she's just like,
not going to.
Like, you're not my boss.
I'm going to bring this beautiful lady client,
right,
a bowl of broth, because anyone, like, who's not a detective can totally tell that she's recently got over a recent illness, you dumbass. So
right?
I'm totally going to take care of her, even though you are not. And Watson's like, thank you, Mrs. Hudson.
And then Holmes is like, Hudson, would you, no, he says, Mrs. Hudson, would you please vanish?
Yeah.
And then she vanishes, and she gets to the door, and she turns back, and she gives him this snark-ass, like, smile, like,
mm-hmm.
like didn't I just do awesome? And he smiles back at her, like, yeah.
Get out.
Now fuck
out.
Off.
He didn't.
Fuck off. It's adorable, though. It's so cute. It's a very domestic episode, and, like, it is legit that, like, it should be, because if you're going to expand it, no crime solving actually happens.
And it's the perfect thing to expand on, because we don't get enough of that, I don't think.
Yeah.
We don't get it. We get little hints of it, and you know, Watson is so great at painting massive scenes with just a couple of words.
Yeah.
So we get a little bit of what it's like to live with him, which is why we know he's not the worst man in London, but the worst roommate in London.
Oh, totally.
Mm-hmm. But in something like this, it's wonderful to watch the two of them at home getting on each other's tits, like, fucking just paint the just shit. And, like, Watson, why did you tidy up?
Was it? Yeah, it was like the subtitles said Watson,
but those subtitles were very wrong.
Oh, my God, we screen capped a subtitle. It's amazing. So look forward to this if we can actually make it work, because I don't know that I'll find the file somewhere. But like the program that we were playing the DVD on, it wouldn't turn the subtitles off, and I'm like,
just and the subtitles were wrong,
and they were wrong a lot. But at a certain point, they were right. And they and Holmes turns around from his desk and he says to Watson, you know, I actually think Agatha, my fiance, and Lady Eva Brackenstall have something in common. And Watson's like, what? And he says, juice, Watson. Juice. And when he says juice, he means like, you know, bravery. Like they both have a pair.
But the subtitle, the way he pauses, it's just they made juice one word.
Right.
And then the next phrase said Watson juice.
Jeremy Brett kind of pouting.
And it just says Watson juice.
Oh my God. That's amazing.
It's the thing that happened.
It's great.
We're pretty proud.
Yeah, we're really excited.
Oh my God. I'm so sad Artie isn't here right now.
No.
See, Artie needs to know of the Watson juice.
Watson juice. If there was a drink called Watson juice, you would definitely guzzle it.
Oh my God.
Oh my God. Can I interrupt really quickly for a second?
Oh, please.
Please, for love of God.
It's midnight in London right now, so happy birthday, Christine.
Oh,
hey.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you.
I have no health insurance.
Happy birthday,
dear 26-year-old American.
Happy birthday to you.
Thank you.
Thanks for bringing us all here and founding this.
Yeah, that's a fact.
That's a pretty cool thing you did.
The thing.
So thanks.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Yeah. It was a nice thing. Did we have any more internet questions?
Not really that we didn't cover.
Oh, rock on.
There's one that asked us to talk about who Milverton's based on historically.
Oh,
but I don't know a whole lot about that.
He is based on a real person. He was an art dealer. Milverton is based on an actual art dealer.
Ooh, gross.
Yeah, and Doyle hated him.
Whoa, this is so good. What? This is the longest episode ever. It's so good.
It's not going to be because I talked about it recently, but like that doesn't mean all the facts are still in my head. There was an art dealer in London.
Hold on.
He was a sleazy piece of shit.
Yep, he was a sleazy piece of shit.
Charles Augustus, something starts with an H.
It's Howell. Howell.
Yeah.
And no, he was blackmailing Rossetti.
Amy, or whoever is talking, talk about it, because I'll find it.
Okay, what I know is that he was an art dealer, so the art connection is there, and a blackmailer, and he was found dead in mysterious circumstances. If I'm not mistaken, his throat was cut, and he had a coin in his mouth. And it was an unsolved case.
This is wonderful.
It was so exciting. And wasn't it that actually, like, it was posthumous that he was, like, that his throat was slit? So it just, you know, speaks of whoever killed him really disliked him. So it's not just that he died because of that, but it was something that they did just to make it worse.
Yes. And I, you know, it makes me wonder how much of the ending of the case was Doyle riffing off the history, the recent history, and
I think it was because he many of the cases are
loosely based off or inspired by real cases that were happening at the time, mm-hmm. which only further confused the Victorian people thinking Sherlock Holmes was a real person.
Well, and it's a great one for people who play the game, like, all the time, because there are so many yeah. historical tie-ins.
It's not in the clinger, but...
Useless.
That guy sucks.
Apart from Free Sherlock rocking and...
WTF.
And creating awesome annotated editions and...
But otherwise, you are useless.
Other than so that. Useless, other than your many fucking amazing uses.
Well, the
cannot annotate the annotated version.
I can. If nobody's going very quickly, I can find it pretty fast.
I have it on Wikipedia, and we all know how reliable that always is.
It's reliable enough.
What does it say?
It's good enough. Right. Okay, so, Amy, what happened?
Well,
Rossetti
is the only person that is definitively linked in this article. He apparently was an art dealer who preyed on lots of people. The guy died in 1890. His body was found near a Chelsea public house. With,
it was sort of like the social circle, right?
Right.
Like, he met by means of dealing art to them. And then right. it was like, oh, by the way, your life is ruined. Sorry.
Right.
Sorry.
Like Maria said, his throat was slit posthumously, and the presence of the coin was supposed to be symbolic of those guilty of slander. So
yeah.
that's the connection there.
Melinda's so excited. You can't see her face, but she's
so excited. Wait. I need to know the name of the guy because there's got to be like a biography or something about
Howell. Charles Augustus Howell.
Really? Yeah. Are you serious?
Mm-hmm.
I'm writing it down. Wow.
I'm sure there's a lot of information available on further investigation.
Officially of Melinda, very engaged.
Melinda can, like, write the footnote to this one.
Charles Augustus Howell.
Okay. It is a neat historical connection, though, because, you know, Doyle would have... It is conceivable, since Doyle was such a, in general, not in certain specific instances, but
philanthropic
often,
do-gooder.
Philanthropic do-gooder, exactly.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
That he would have seen this person at work, and that he would have been like, I'm going to write a fucking short story about you, motherfucker.
And immortalize you as a peaceball.
Yep.
Young, beautiful ladies are going to hate you.
All the single ladies.
All the stuff.
Google Images does have a photo of this guy, and he does, to some degree, fit the description.
Yes.
Really?
Yes, the physical description. Yeah, I remember that part.
Doyle wasn't subtle.
No matter what else Doyle was not subtle.
Arthur continuity Doyle is not Arthur subtle Doyle.
Awesome.
If I can.
You should put it on the list.
Yeah.
Write a book report. Put it on the
If I can find a book, I'll read the book and I'll write a book report. And
yay.
I'm very excited about reading about this fella.
Woohoo! Yay. Well, excited about it because he was gross.
Yeah. Well, I mean, like
you
the history channel is like 24/7 Hitler. Why? Like, gross. And people are fascinated by gross things, you know?
This
like,
is true.
And Milverton was like Hitler in training.
Well, and it's interesting to see that if Holmes hated him more than he hated Moriarty or any of these other people, that by extension means that Doyle hated this man more than he did even other types of crime, which is an interesting thought.
Yeah.
I think it's a 100%. I think it's a particularly disgusting crime. I do.
Yeah.
Because the victim is you're not just a quick victim of an accident or, you know, or a gunshot, or an attack. It's something that you know is coming, and you have a really long time to think about all the repercussions that are going to come of it, and it's enough time to really just make you sick, and probably wish you were dead, but not sure that you have the courage to do it yourself.
I can't imagine how they're going to adapt this for the BBC version, but, like, they're going to hit where it hurts.
Because it's the Moffat.
Because it's, and, yeah. Totally. Yeah, it's gonna be stuff like John Watson, you shot a cab driver.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Sure, definitely.
That makes sense.
Stuff like that. You know?
That makes absolute sense. And
who's gonna be so gay?
You murdered. And
That is these not writers, legal. These writers are so good, and Milverton's crimes are one of the, just, I think that that being a victim of Milverton would be the worst thing out of anybody.
I'd rather have Moriarty. I'd rather say, hey, Professor Moriarty.
I'd rather have 5 Oars picks delivered to me right now.
Yeah,
and be like, totally. Okay, I've got a couple of hours, but at least it will be quick.
Right.
I would rather have that than get a business card from Milverton delivered to me. Absolutely. He's terrifying.
And that speaks to something much deeper. I mean, like, what is it?
It's so personal. It's like it's taking away from yourself. Mm-hmm. Slowly, yeah. Slowly, like, sort of
using material that you gave
that you created.
That's why it's worse.
Right.
It's the worst criminal ever. And he's the worst man in London.
He's the worst man in London.
I hate this guy. I really hate this guy. Like, I feel the hate, and I understand why he was so grossed out.
And also, I think, you know, Moriarty is making no bones about the fact that he knows he's evil, and he's, like, happy about it. Milverton has this supercilious, almost holier-than-thou quality to him that adds to the revulsion.
Over this tiny sum of money, all this, that, like, you just argued with me. You were being so obstinate. Why?
Yeah.
Why? It would have been so easy to settle. Like, he thinks he's so in the right. He thinks he's in the right. It's so gross.
And he still wins if he exposes people because, you know.
That's right. Because now
he won't take a smaller amount than what he's asked for because it works the same because other people get more scared of him when he exposes someone.
Mm-hmm. You know what Holmes is also disgusted by, Anna, and this works in pretty much every canon case except for the Priory
Priory Scholars?
Priory Scholars, yeah. I was about to say the Priory School, and I was like, nope. Holmes is not interested in money. He's interested in having enough money so he can live in a nice flat. So he got a roomie. And then after he got the roomie, so he had enough money to live in a nice flat, he made a fucking fortune, and he could have lived in a palace. He could have moved outside of London and have been, like, Watson says at a certain point that the payments that Holmes made to Mrs. Hudson were princely. Like, because he knows he's worst lodger ever. So my point is that he is particularly disgusted. This is all he wants. He just wants this set of rooms and 17 steps
and his friend
in the other chair, and that's it. That's
and his housekeeper.
That's what he says in the empty house. That's all he wants. He says specifically in the empty house, all I want is this flat and Watson in the other chair. That's it.
Yeah.
So
he
is so disgusted by Milverton adding money on top of money.
And Milverton
hates that shit.
And he lives in a house alone.
He lives in a giant house by himself. And Holmes is like, he doesn't even need the money at some point. And I don't know the exact quote, but Holmes at some point is like, he doesn't even need the money. And he's looking at it and he's like, what? Like, why? You don't need the money.
No, that's so bad. That's an interesting comparison because we have the Pickwick comparison, but there's almost a Ralph Nickleby comparison if you're familiar with Nicholas Nickleby. Ralph Nickleby is almost a similar type of person, somebody who lives alone on extortionate lending fees, but there's also an aspect of blackmail in that he has so much information on different people and their lifestyles. And I think those characters are so easy to just revile and hate because it's like hoarding of possessions for no reason, which is so the opposite of Holmes.
That's brilliant. Yeah, absolutely. And he's like, I got a slipper, I'll just put my tobacco in it. And then it's like,
yeah.
You want what?
Even when he had that emerald ring, he only wore it once, probably just to be like, you know, showing it to Watson or whatever. And then it's just like, eh.
Whatever.
Probably tossed it out the window, you know?
He doesn't wear all that shit.
But I bet he kept the amethyst snuffbox. Seems like something he would like.
He kept the amethyst snuffbox.
But the ring seems awfully gaudy. It doesn't seem his style.
No. I thought it was an emerald time pin.
No, that was from a certain gracious lady.
Oh, that was... She would have kept that. Yeah. She would have kept that.
He kept that. He didn't keep the emerald snake.
No.
But he kept the end of this stuff.
Yeah. And he kept the... you know what he kept? He kept the coin on his watch chain.
And the photograph.
And the photograph.
So this is the sort of priorities this gentleman has as opposed right. to this.
Which is also kind of, which is also kind of funny because there's this general theory and thought of Holmes as being this cold and uncaring person, but the things he wants are sentimental things.
100%, mm-hmm. yeah. Yeah.
He has a heart. And occasionally gets agitated.
Okay. He has a great heart as well as a great brain.
And then an agitated man will do. He will fly to tea.
What are